The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Yappa Toy, and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. On the phone, we have Mr. Hassan Goblin for our LIRR Strike edition of the show.
There are no trains.
And in the studio, we have a special guest who we're going to be talking to, with, and about. It is Star Trek Long Island's very own, Stephanie Gangwon.
And it is called Trek Long Island. Trek, of course, it's Long not Star Island. Trek. I wouldn't get.
Right, yes. Trek Long Island. Going to RISA, right?
Is that? We're going to RISA this year. We're going on vacation.
So, as I mentioned, we're going to be talking to Stephanie in just a few minutes. But before we do any of that, we have to take away with the non news.
It's morphin' time!
The non news is the news. The non news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi.
For your Wi-Fi.
As well as the fine folks of the Big Apple Con, which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of pop culture-ness and comic book stuff. More information, go to www.bigapplecc.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way in November the 21st of this year. Tickets are not on sale right now. Also want to give out shout-outs for our Patreons, of which they are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Burrell, Newsday Famous Resident Media, Shadow Rabbit Art, Yasmin Ray, The Hurricane, and Millie Portez. Want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website, www.itcamefromradio.com. There's a little button on there that takes you right to our Patreon page. Also on the It Came From Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 and Issue 2 are on sale right now. And finally, on Wednesday, June the 10th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to have our 106th live show with award-winning musical theater writer and performer Sarah Kaufman, and they will be giving out a book of their autographed copy of their book, and we're also giving away two tickets to the Trek Long Island convention. So, Stephanie.
Hey, what's up?
We've known you for quite some time.
Yeah.
You've actually been to our live show at the East Meadow Public Library.
I have been.
And you make conventions.
Yeah, now people can't see me, though. This is a different one. This is cool. I can make faces.
Yes. And she is, by the way, everybody listening to us. I always like to start off with the simple question for any convention organizer. Why? Because people are crazy, and it's a very difficult job to put together a convention. Why in the world would you want to take on that job?
I just love stress and anxiety. You know, I really didn't want as much hair as I have right now. And, you know, no, I just love it. I really love to bring a show to people that wouldn't normally get to meet all their heroes, and try to keep it at a price that's reasonable enough that everybody can join us. And I love watching people just fan out, fanboy out, and fangirl out.
So why sci-fi? Why Trek? Why not a Baywatch convention?
Well, that'd be kind of cool. But Trek, I love what it stands for. The future stands for possibilities, hope, and what the future should bring. And that's why I went for Star Trek.
So when you were young, Stephanie, were you like, one day I'm going to make my own convention? Or was that something that just happened along your glorious route of professionalism as a librarian, right? You're a librarian now?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I'm actually going to blame Ken Deep of Long Island Doctor Who. When I started working with him, and I really had so much fun helping him put together that convention that I was like, you know, what am I doing? I should do my own darn one, and that's why I'm doing it.
All right. Hassan, do you have a question for Stephanie?
I do. I have a question. How are you finding the engagement with the fans when it comes to this new era of Trek that we're having? It's, like, so controversial online, but I was wondering if you get a gauge of how the fans are actually interacting with shows like Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks and Discovery. If you have, like, a boots-on-the-ground experience with their reaction to all of that stuff?
It really varies. It's all over there. The people who just love the new things, the people who hate the new things. But, you know, I have a theory. When Deep Space Nine came out, when Next Gen came out, Voyager came out, everybody was like, oh, I hate this. This is the worst. This is the worst. This is the worst. But then it stopped for a while. And they all were like, well, I really like Star Trek. So they all loved it. And I do think the same thing's going to happen with all of the shows that are coming out now. We're going to see slowly in 10 years all these people that are like, oh, I hate this. But yeah, but you know what? Actually, I kind of miss Star Trek, and I'm really kind of enjoying this. And I think it's going to change.
I agree. Thank you.
Do you think that that's is like some type of cycle, that whenever there's anything new, there's going to be that hatred and was it the reject?
Yeah, people don't like, you know, for the most part, a lot of people are really scared of the change. They want to hold on to what made them comfortable. I think every single person that goes to my show, they play Star Trek in the background of everything they do because it's their comfort food. Now they're going to put on something that they've never heard this episode. They don't know this person, and it's like, I don't. That's not what I'm used to. And soon they will be used to it.
I remember as far back as the reactions to the motion picture.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
And they weren't all favorable. Now the motion picture has its issues.
Yeah.
But over the years, it has had a complete renaissance of appreciation.
Yeah.
But when that motion picture first, and I was a very small kid, but I remember people weren't as happy as everybody anticipated they would be by even our original characters coming back. So yeah, there's definitely there's a period, there is a hiatus and then a period of renaissance for all the eras. I do agree.
Did you find it more difficult now because there's such a wide variety of people to get as guests? Or is it just, you'll just pick whoever you can afford?
I just throw in a fishbowl and I pull out now. I try to get somebody that represents each series. It's kind of impossible. Next Gen is the most difficult to get. Really, they are.
Really?
Yeah, they're not cheap. they're not cheap. But we are in talks with some, so hopefully in the future we will have some. The Deep Space Nine people, they are so amazing. Bringing them, and they're just so great with the fans. They're great. I'm looking forward to seeing my Starfleet Academy guest, but I think he's going to be pretty excited. I think he's going to be great. But I think what would you ask exactly? I went away.
The difficulty of picking and choosing your guests.
Yeah, I just try to get somebody that is from every kind of level of Star Trek. You want to get somebody from the original series, which is getting harder every year, obviously. And you want some variation. And also you want to stick with the theme. So, like, we try to have a theme each year. Just it makes it a little more cohesive for us. So Risa is our theme this year. So, yeah, we got a couple of people that really aren't in the theme. But for the most part, everybody has some part of Risa.
So for people who are unaware, what is the theme of Risa beyond the Pleasure Planet? You're going to have a pleasurable convention?
Yes. Now, when people think Risa, they say the Pleasure Planet. But pleasure doesn't have to necessarily be what you're thinking, all of you. Pleasure is just anything people take happiness in, pleasure in. It could be what you're thinking of or playing chess. It could be anything. So we're going to have events that go from Vulcan Pilates. We're going to have events. We have a burlesque show. We have a comedy. We have a cosplay cabaret. We have a luau with the stars. So we have a lot of events going on this year. But we want to try, and gaming, a lot of gaming. We're bringing, the Game Map is coming, and they're going to sponsor all the gaming. And it's just a splash of everything. So it feels like Risa. When people walk in, it's not just, this is the only thing, everybody gets a horror gun. No, that's not what it is.
Are you going to have like palm trees or something outside?
Yes.
You
are. I'm working on getting some blow-up palm trees.
There you go.
You know, the hotel's big, so it's not like I can make it like... I'm trying. I'm trying the best I can, so don't judge me, people. If you have a palm tree at home, feel free to bring it.
So, Brian, we're going to take a quick break. We're good for that. We'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com.
Calling all comic fans, Hurricane, Long Island's only benefit comic art convention, returns in 2026. Join us May 9th and December 12th at Bethany Congregational Church, East Rockaway, New York. Grab toys and collectibles, dig through comic books, meet artists and writers, enter amazing raffles, enjoy food, fellowship, and rock your cosplay. Just a $5 donation gets you in from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit Hurricane on Facebook, and on Instagram, it's Hurricane LI for details. Hurricane, where heroes unite for good.
Sword of Omens, come to my hand. I, Lion-O, command it. Hi, everybody. This is Larry Kenny, the voice of Lion-O on Thundercats. And you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Comic Books for Kids is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
This is Michael Bell, the voice of Duke from G.I. Joe, and I am here at CradleCom, and I am with It Came From the Radio.
BKG Productions, LLC, your ultimate audio transformation partner. Got audio that needs a magic touch? I am here to elevate your content. Specializing in professional audio editing, I can clean up background noise, plosives, and pesky S sounds. From podcasts to songs, I've got you covered. Whether it's an interview, music track, setting volumes to precise specs, email bkgvobiz@gmail.com or go to fiverr.com, search for BK Graves 1, and trust me to make your sound sparkle.
Hey, this is Billy West from Show Business. You're listening to It Came From the Radio. Get out. Get out.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Hi, this is Sherilyn Fenn, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
Hey kids, this is CJ Ramone of the world famous Ramones, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking with Mr. Hassan Gawin on the phone.
I'm still on the phone.
And Miss Stephanie Gangwon of Treklon.
Gangone.
So it's spelled G-A-N-G-O-N-E.
Everybody says it different. You know, just do what you want. I don't care. It doesn't matter. You spell my name with a P-H. I mean, hey, let's go for it.
I did. And then I realized I messed up. And then Facebook wouldn't let me edit the post. So I was like, I guess that's just going to be her name right now.
That's my name. I'm just going to judge you, but that's cool.
So, Treklon Island. What difficulties have you had putting together a convention?
The difficulties are getting people to buy their tickets early, for goodness sake. I know it sounds silly, but the outreach, reaching out to people. I swear to you, I could promote everywhere on Long Island, and people from New Mexico will come. But the people that live in Hoppock, they don't know who I am. The hardest part is that, is getting the outreach, finding the people on Long Island. So we're doing all sorts of different things this year. I have a partnership with Discover Long Island this year, so that's helping. We interviewing with Newsday this year, so that's going to help. So it's really meeting the town people, meeting all these other organizations to help promote. It's not easy.
Speaking of not easy, I am pressed to mention, because we like to be fair, that I've seen some things on Facebook that some stuff going on. Is everything okay with that?
Oh yeah, everything's wonderful. You know, there's always drama. There's always people that like to have a little drama. But our friend in Port Jeff has disappeared, so we're good now.
Awesome, awesome. Hassan, you have a question for Stephanie?
Oh, I want to know what that other question was about. Okay, but
there was a murderer. No, I'm kidding.
It was Jack the Ripper. It's a Star Trek deep dive. So I'm a big Trek fan. I'm glad that Mark is here, because he's actually asking you pertinent questions about about the show, and I just hear another Trek person, and I have Trek questions. Mm-hmm. So, as you mentioned before about the errors, the hiatus, and then the, mm-hmm. the errors get their own renaissance.
Yeah,
there's been a million errors for Star Trek. There's the TOS era. There's the TOS movies. There's the TNG era, which includes DS9 mm-hmm. and Voyager and Enterprise, and now there's the new Kirkman era. Mm-hmm. And it feels like that the Kirkman era is kind of coming to an end or kind of wrapping up to some extent. So, of course, most likely we're going to get another Trek era soon because that's just the way the franchise has been. So do you think your personal, because there's no right or wrong, mm-hmm. I also have an opinion. Do you think we're going to need a hiatus mm-hmm. of no activity for a little while before everyone's ready for a new Trek era? Do you think we could just go right into it?
We need a break. We need everybody to take in what we have. We need authors to write some fan fiction. We need it's too much at us at once, and everybody needs to catch up on what they didn't watch. We need to give us 5 years. I know it sounds feels like a long time, but we need about that much time so we can make sense
fully
of it all.
Appreciate
it's so much.
What
there's a lot. Yeah, rewatch it a couple of times because a lot of these shows, Discovery is a good one. A lot of people didn't like it the first time, but you watch it a second time, and then you watch the other shows surrounding it. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. I get it now. People need to watch it all. And then even the video games, some of the video games like match up with it. So we need a little time. And then when it comes back in full force, and people have new directors, new actors, new ideas, then I think that it'll be even better and everybody will hate it and say it's terrible, and then they'll love it again in 10 years.
I completely agree. Thank you.
If the shows go off the air, doesn't that hurt a Star Trek convention, a sci-fi convention, a pop culture convention because it's not in the zeitgeist anymore, or does it actually help? Well, I mean, I would guess it would be easier to get guests.
Oh, that's true. It's a lot cheaper. No, I will tell. Okay, let's think about this. Next Gen hasn't been on for how long?
Right.
But if I got Patrick Stewart tomorrow, guess what?
Everybody's coming.
They're coming. So it's really people. Star Trek is different than the normal kinds of shows that people watch that they kind of forget about. This is like, you know, like, okay, I love Stranger Things, but in 5 years, yeah, they're not. All those meet and greets aren't going to be as big. Star Trek's different. People connect with Star Trek, and they connect with this future, this world. It's totally different.
So I'm going to...
It's the conventions that actually kept Star Trek around after the TOS era,
yep.
up all the way into the movies, because Star Trek, there have been many years where Star Trek was declared dead, mm-hmm. and it just wasn't. It was the fans that were keeping it alive.
Mm-hmm. They always will.
I'm going to share one of my favorite stories from a Star Trek convention that I went to one of the creation conventions back in the day in the city, and they had Scotty. Hmm. And Scotty was very limited on time. And people will ask him, you know, what's your favorite Star Trek movie? What's this? And ask him a couple of questions. And he has one final question. And this little girl, probably 6, comes up to the microphone and says, what's your favorite movie? And the whole audience is like, boo.
Oh, no.
They all booed this poor little girl.
Oh, no.
They already asked that question.
Yeah.
And Scotty, you know, he had to leave. Mm-hmm. So the whole New York audience booed this poor girl.
Well, now she's traumatized.
But he was so nice.
You would remember that. That would be your favorite
that's
moment,
mean.
Mark.
I didn't say it was my favorite moment.
Did you boo?
I didn't boo. I was laughing. I was like, oh, my God.
That's meaner.
Well, I didn't laugh in front of the kids all the way over there.
I'm out of here.
But on the flip side, one of my favorite memories, Hassan, is that I was at a convention with Worf.
Michael Dorn, yeah.
He was on stage, and somebody came up to him as he was on stage, and they whispered in his ear, and he says, oh, you know, there's such and such in the audience. And the guy was like, yeah, it's me. He goes, your wife is in labor. And everybody was like, yay, they cheered the guy.
Aww.
And he was like, yeah, he felt like the man, and then he ran out because he had to go tend to his wife. But in my mind, like, the fact, like, yay, they're celebrating that he had intercourse with his wife and he hasn't a baby. Oh, they're like, yes, he's a man.
Yes.
So
that's what you think of. Wow.
I'm not commenting on that one at all.
What
I'm
kind
not,
of radio show
I'm
is this?
With it.
So on the same lines of those two stories, do you personally, mm-hmm. Stephanie, have a memory or something that has happened at your convention?
Oh my goodness, it's so funny. I have to really dig in there because I am so busy at the show that I rely on all your pictures. So keep them coming, people, because I rely on it. But I mean, just the first year, David Ajala, that he was his birthday, and everybody kept bringing him cakes and singing to him. Oh my God, he's so dreamy, David Ajala, and everything about Doug Jones. Everything about Doug Jones is amazing, and. Right now they're coming. He's not coming to the event, but his agent's coming to the event to promote his autobiography, Get Me Doug Jones.
Okay.
Kickstarter starts tomorrow, and it's going to be amazing. Doug is such a great guy, and everything about him, it should be celebrated. But he doesn't want it to be. He is so against it. Like, I don't want this. But I remember him more than anything.
So you're making a convention because you love science fiction, you love mm-hmm. Star Trek, you love all the stuff. But you can't enjoy the convention.
No, I don't. I just run around like
a
lunatic.
That's a terrible idea.
No,
to make a
but
convention.
I love it. It's just something about it, you know. When you're there and like everybody's going bonkers everywhere, and I sit down, and I just look around at everybody. I'm like, oh my goodness, everybody's having so much fun. Everybody's so happy. You know, it's all worth the fact that I'm broke. I love it.
So let's get some important facts down. What's the date? How much are tickets? What kind of events? What's the headliners? Is there free parking? Is there food? What we got going on?
Hold on one second. I got to put up my thing because I don't remember everything at once. I have a terrible memory.
Okay, so when's the dates?
The dates are next month, June 12th through 14th. But just so you know, the guests aren't there until the Saturday and Sunday. But the Friday, we have Con the Musical coming. They're going to be there for 3 hours. It's going to be an interview, and then they're going to do parts of the play. It's going to be amazing. It's really cool.
Okay.
And then we have karaoke at night, of course, and everybody loves that. But on the Saturday and Sunday is where everything really begins. So admission for the weekend is $80. And then for a day, I think Saturday is $45, Sunday is like $35 or something like that. I'm not terrible. I shouldn't know that, but I don't. And then kids, you know, kids under 5 come for free, so just bring them. We have a whole big children's track going on. They can have retro gaming, Ozobots for the kids. And it's run by librarians. Suffolk County librarians run it. Yeah, it's really cool.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
Free parking?
Free parking.
And where is it at?
It's at a hotel. It's at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Hop Hog. We have food this year. Last year we had all this drama with the food, but this year we have food trucks. Yay, food trucks. So we got a lemonade stand, we got a meat patty stand, and we have right now a Greek food truck, and we're working on one more. And then the hotels should have their own food in their carts and stuff, but you know, we're mad at them. So, you know, buy the Greek food.
Support the food trucks.
Support the food trucks. And for guests. Oh my goodness, I have a lot of guests.
Well, give me the top three.
My tops. All of them are the tops.
No offense to everybody else.
Yeah, no offense. I'll say the top and then the people that don't normally come out.
Okay.
So we got Nana Visitor, if you don't know who she is. I'm rolling my eyes, it hurts. Jeffrey Combs. he's been in everything, we all know that. Celia Rose Gooding, Strange New Worlds. And Nicole DeBoer's coming. Kareem Diane, I think it's Diane is how you say his last name. He's the Klingon on Starfleet Academy, so everybody's super excited. I think it's the first small con he's ever been to. He's done the big ones, but getting him was very difficult. Oh my goodness, was it.
And I want to mention that the thing about a small con mm-hmm. is that the people will have a better experience with the guests and the interactions and the vendors mm-hmm. at a smaller con than they would at a larger convention.
Usually they're at the bar afterwards. Because, like, after everybody's like at the bar. Like, last year, Terry Farrell was sitting at the bar and everybody was just chilling out. It's totally, totally different. We're not hiding them behind walls unless they want to be hidden, but usually don't. So
I think it's an important thing because throughout the years I've gone to big conventions and small conventions, and sometimes you see the same people at the different conventions, and the interactions are vastly different.
Mm-hmm.
And the prices are also vastly different. So some places I like to mention is that you go to pay hundreds of dollars and you get a 5-second interaction with someone, where at a smaller convention, the opportunity is less, as you just said, and you have more time to be with them. So I always want to stress that as an important thing. Is that something that was in the back of your mind?
Yes, absolutely. I don't want to be a gigantic creation convention. I want to stay about where I am, maybe a little bigger, but not much bigger than this. I want people to be able to meet their heroes. I don't want them to be like, oh, there he is, bye. You know, I want them to meet their heroes and get to know them and feel like it was a special point in their lives. Because how many times have you gotten an autograph and then you walk away, you're like, well, that was dumb. You know, that was the worst.
I can throw this out because we're almost out of time. I want to throw out this quick story. So I've met most of the original series cast, and I had most of their autographs, but only George Takei was the one who personalized each and every single autograph. And we didn't even ask for it. This was back in the day.
He's a great man.
And it was so nice that he would, you know, personalize. I mean, we didn't expect that. We're like, oh, my God. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Almost out of time. So final thought, Stephanie?
Final thought is you should all come to the convention and hang out with us, and it's going to be amazing. It's 3 days. Bring everybody. Bring the kids. Bring the tribbles. No, don't bring the tribbles. We don't have room for that. But come. TrekLongIsland.com. Come to us. Hang out with us.
Hassan, final thought?
All Trek is good Trek. Go to Trek Long Island and celebrate your love of this enduring franchise with fellow fans.
So that is it for this portion of the show. Everybody listening to us on the air, we'll see you next time. For everybody else, stay tuned for more. It Came From the Radio.
Hi, I'm Olivia Youngers from Star Trek Picard, and you're listening to It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. I had originally planned to do a Mark tutorial for this little segment, but instead, I have to run across a brand new movie that I saw, and I feel that this is a good time to talk about it and give it a review. The movie is called Master of the Universe. Yes. So I saw that, and I was like, ooh, He-Man. But I realized within 2 seconds it is an Asylum film. Now, Asylum film, as I've mentioned many times on this show, is an unapologetic company, independent film company, that blatantly makes rip-off movies as best of possible movies that are coming out. And I remember when I was working with Blockbuster Video well back in the day, they used to have movies that were similar in title to whatever movie was coming out. And according to interviews, that was on purpose. So that way when people were looking through the Blockbuster aisle or the video aisles, they would see something like, oh, this looks like that, and they would get it. So that pretty much tells you what you're going into in this movie. Now, on top of that, I want to say that there was a line in this movie that is exceptional and probably my favorite line of the year so far in any movie I've seen or any form of entertainment I've seen for 2026. And basically, it was four people in the cast. They were on a spaceship, and the pilot tells the other person sitting in the navigator chair, hey, you're in a navigator chair. Can you navigate? And the guy responds without any type of sarcasm or anything or straight line. He goes, I don't know what any of this says, does, or means. And that's the type of movie you're going to get. So I'm watching this movie, and as I've mentioned many times on the show, I don't like to watch trailers unless I'm on the fence of something to watch it. Otherwise, I'm just going to watch the movie because I know I'm going to watch it. So I see a movie called Master of the Universe by Asylum. I'm like, yeah, I got to see this. So the movie itself looks like it's made for a dollar. Now, I understand low-budget films, and I understand how difficult it is to make an independent film, but good God, they had one set, and probably a green screen set, and it just looked like it was this random building that they found that doesn't look anything like any type of futuristic or a castle. It just looked like some abandoned warehouse, barely, or like a school or something that was just happened that they just find it, but in the best possible way. This movie could have easily have been made in the 80s, and it was made serious, and it feels like what they would call a cult classic, where this is something that was just so bad it was good.
And as I mentioned, very bad CGI, very low budget, had a very painfully limited cast. Like, you can tell they had like 8 guys, which, once again, they committed to it. So that's what made it entertaining. The beginning of the movie is pretty straightforward. The bad guy's like, I want to destroy this planet, and that's it. However, the logic is just out the window. It has very 80s and 70s logic, as if you know what I'm talking about when you're listening to watching a sci-fi film. And also, on top of it, it's because it's called Master of the Universe. You would think there's some type of He-Man or some type of connection to anything closely related to the Masters of the Universe toy line or the franchise or the movie that's coming out. But no, this movie could have easily been a Star Wars ripoff or even a Rebel Moon ripoff, which goes to say a lot if you remember what Rebel Moon is, which was a passed on Star Wars treatment by Zack Snyder. And that was bad in a bad way. This movie was bad in a good way. Although, it's really easy. Like, there is the brother-sister connection. I mean, there's not really spoilers in this type of movie. It's just the bad guy's coming and the good guys want to fight him. That's it. It's nothing that's even spoiler world. Like, you just, you're going to watch this movie for what it is. If you know what it is, you're going into it, you're going to have a grand old time. And that's what I did. He doesn't even have a sword. There's no sword of power. Why isn't He-Man no sword? If you look at the cover box, he has a sword. No sword in the movie. He does have a weapon. It's an axe. But no sword. And it's not even remotely close to any type of Masters of the Universe connection, but I said, except for the brother sister thing, which, like I said, could have easily been a Star Wars reference or Rebel Moon ripoff, whatever. Overall, the dialogue was really bad, the acting was really bad, but it didn't feel like a student film, which has been a problem for a lot of independent films, that it looked like it was made cheaply. This movie looks like it was made on the cheap, but kind of purposefully, if that makes any sense. Like, there's a difference between when you see a low-budget film that doesn't look like a low-budget film, and you see a low-budget film that looks like it was two guys, their first movie out of high school, low-budget type of film. So this looked like a really cheesy, bad 80s film that you could just watch and laugh at and enjoy, and it was just great. And I will mention it one last time. The fact that he goes, I don't know what any of this says, does, or means, is so beautifully delivered. This is a great, entertaining film. So I think you guys should go check it out if you're a fan of, I guess, low-budget rip-off, the Timu version of the movie. But like I said, it wasn't even a Master of the Universe Timu version. It was just a really bad sci-fi 80s film that happened to be called Master of the Universe for obvious reasons. So if you're going to the movie, you see the trailer, don't even bother watching the trailer. I say just go for it. If this is your type of thing, just go in for it, full throttle into this movie. Don't even try to make any kind of sense of it, because, as you know, I like to pick movies apart. This movie doesn't even try. It doesn't even try to make sense. It's just people appear, people editing is just all over the place. People go from one place to the other. I mean, the Man of Steel did that. So that has nothing to do with how low budget the film is. It's just that hilariously bad. And it's not Plan 9 from Outer Space bad. It's not that far. But this one is pretty good for that type of movie. Like I said, if you know what you're getting into, it's a good, fun film. You know, they say turn off your brain, and I don't like that, but because of the other types of movies that they're expecting you to try to make sense, they're trying to make it a big thing, and trying to make it a big spectacle, but not this movie. This movie, unapologetically, as I said before, is just a really schlocky, cheesy, 80s throwback sci-fi film that was made for a dollar. So I think you should go watch it. I enjoyed it. It will not make the honorable mentions of good or bad, because it's so good, it's bad. But it's in there, something that you guys should check out 100%. So with that, We're going to take another break, and we'll be right back with more. It Came From the Radio.
This is Michael Bell, the voice of Duke from G.I. Joe, and I am here at CradleCon, and I am with It Came From the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
Born in 1977, Chris Siva is currently a Rochester, New York-based producer who's produced over 65 films, holy moly, including Bloodfart Lake 3, the documentary, MOVA, Demon Ass Kicker, which I just saw. It was one of my top three movie watching experiences, and my other two are Borat and 300, so you can take or leave from that. Wellsville Nights. There's Taint Light, which I didn't see, but I imagine it's like a spoof of Twilight based on the cover, and the description is, when a young girl falls for an ancient vampire with great hair, they must fend off another group of bloodsuckers and the werewolf who desires her. He's created the Warlock Home Video Network, which is quite a feat, with a bit of a cult following. He has some rabid fans, and one YouTube commenter on one YouTube video, the making of Crapster piece Terror at Bloodfart Lake, wrote in, "Terror at Bloodfart Lake makes my genitalia explode." So welcome, Chris Siva.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. So you've done a lot of work. I have a lot of, I have at least 60 movies to watch because I've only seen, I think, two. But let's get into it. So even though you've created over 65 films, in another interview, you claimed to only like about 16. So what makes you like or dislike one of your films?
You know, it can be any manner of things, but due to the nature of how I shoot my films, which is very fast, you know, 2 to 3 days, you know, I think our longest shoot was 4.5. But,
amazing.
So due to the nature of it, there's always something going wrong. Nothing is ever 100%. You know, because of the nature of how fast we shoot, I have to rip things out that I might not have wanted to rip out. But we're losing time. We're, you know, irritability sets in and things got to go. So that can contribute to my overall feel of the film. You know, sometimes I'll say, hey, there's some good things in there. But overall, I think just as a flick that coalesces into something, it just doesn't work for me. There's also the, you know, sometimes you're making a movie for the wrong reasons.
Maybe like getting a girl or having friends.
No, like
I'm just kidding.
Just for rent, you know.
Oh,
like,
gotcha. Okay.
I don't like that.
No, me either.
You know, I'm thrown into a situation where that kind of happened often, where I was like, oh, crap. Like, you know, I don't really want to turn this into anything, but boy, do I need to pay some bills.
Gotcha.
And I don't like working like that. I've definitely, you know, the last like 10, 15 years, I've gotten better with that. And just saying no. So that can totally, like, you know, there's flicks that we've done where we deliberately are making it poop even more so than the knowledge of us making a crappy movie.
Gotcha.
So we will put the effort in to make it even worse just because we don't want to do it.
That's funny.
And while some fans think that stuff is, quote unquote, the best or, you know, even more hilarious than the stuff we like care about, which I can understand, for us as a group, I think it's just like, okay, that was a stinker. Like, you know, and we try to let everybody know that this is a stinker. You know, so that can, it's that variety of things where I'm just like, oof, like, this didn't work out and I'd rather
gotcha.
not. think about.
So quick question. I'm going to deviate from my question list. So if you're kind of trying to make a movie in 3 days, 4 days, which is pretty much my format for everything going forward, like 1 day, 2 day, 3 days, let's get it done. You know, as a girl, my hair it changes. If you work on a film for a year, I might gain 20 pounds in a year. But anyway, so have you ever dealt with an actor that couldn't get their lines down? And then that alone has happened to me. It's made a short film go one extra day and cost thousands of extra dollars because my co-star couldn't get the lines right. Ever happened?
No. I've been asked this question before, and I always go to the 27 take. So we did it. We were doing a flick called Moist Fury. And our actor, Billy Garbarina, and he knows this. We've talked about it forever. But I wrote a line in the script that he just could not stop laughing. It like took him off guard. Okay. And we did 27 takes before he just stopped laughing.
That's wild.
But I could have said, you know what, we're just going to throw it out and not have that in there. But it was my fault. I said, no, I want this line. This is a funny line. It's staying in there. So I don't care how long it takes. But I've never had if it got to a situation, and believe me, you know, I write like ridiculous monologues for people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they just are just like, oof, I can't get through this. Then I'll cut it in half, you know? Okay. So as much as the other line where I'm like, ooh, it's got to stay in, I can not be, you know, precious with my dialogue as well. And I can say, you know what? I liked it, but if you're struggling with it, then let's just cut half of it and just get what you can, you know?
Well, speaking of cutting, so I'm sure you've heard this, you know, a lot of people in the film business know about Mel Brooks, and supposedly he claimed that he was pulled aside pretty forcefully, given notes by a Warner Brothers producer, and the notes were no punching a horse, take it out, no hitting an old lady, take it out, the N-word, you can't say that word. And Mel Brooks basically said if he took all the notes, he'd end up with a 12-minute movie. So he crumpled up the notes and he threw them in the trash. So what are maybe some critiques you've received that you ignored and said, I'm not listening to you, I'm going to do whatever I want? And then also, how did it go?
I mean, the good thing about what I do, it's micro-budget stuff. So even the producers, most of the producers that I've worked for, are pretty decent as far as like saying yay or nay, you know, they don't even read my scripts. You know, so it's actually more the people that I work with that will say, hey, are we really going to do this?
You know?
And sometimes I will say, okay, if you're not comfortable with this, then it's gone. You know, or if that particular person doesn't want to say those lines, then somebody else will do it. But I've never had to, you know, and I think there's a good portion of the flicks that we've done early on, where it was a lot of, you know, I've talked about this before, but being seduced by the idea of shock value, and, you know, being under the tutelage of Lloyd Kaufman for portion for 10 years.
10 years, all right.
Working with Troma. Not like working for Troma, but them doing stuff for my films and me doing stuff for their films. You know, Lloyd really was like a proponent for pushing the limit. So there's a large swath of my flicks that have stuff that I would not do today, things that I wouldn't even say today.
Really?
Lloyd
supported them. Lloyd
but pushing because that Lloyd in? Was like, people are going to remember
the
stuff that shocks them more than not.
Yeah.
So I took that to heart, and there's a lot of that in a huge portion of the earlier stuff.
That's funny.
That to us, we maybe not necessarily felt like we were saying or doing anything wrong,
mm-hmm.
because we were like, oh no, this is outsider cinema. We are pushing the limit. We are, you know, like, we're Troma, John Waters, we're
right.
all of that squashed together. Let's just go have fun. And damn the consequences, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love working with Lloyd. He's a lot of fun. I tied him up. I rescued him in a movie that's on Troma now. And it will be out, I think, on Amazon Tubi and all this stuff. You'll see it. It's pretty awesome. And he was great. He was a good sport. You know, we tied him up and we had a lot of fun with Lloyd. Yeah, it was great. It was great. All right, so moving on. So now, the main reason I wanted to interview, now, we did a little promo for Wellsville Nights, which I think is amazing. And quick aside, I've told Keith this, I've told Bob Heckman this, I've told a handful of people this, because this is really weird and something that's happened to me many times, where I think it was Pete sent me a clip of Clifford, and it was Martin Short. He plays like a 7-year-old or an 11-year-old, and I watched that, and I was like, this is the best thing ever. You know, I was reminded of that, and I was just obsessively thinking for maybe 1 or 2 hours right in this living room how I have to play the child, you know, 40-year-old, I have to play a child. And then I think within 1 or 2 hours, I get a message and a script from Bob Heckman asking me to play a high schooler. So I guess before we go into MOVA, which really was like, all right, I got to interview Chris now. Tell us a bit about Wellsville Nights. That's such a cool concept, and it's a concept I had in my head, and then the script landed, and it was like already created. Look at that.
So Wellsville Nights, some people might think it's dead, but it's not. You know, for lots of many years, I always wanted to make a parody of 80s teen soap operas. They were ridiculously melodramatic, you know, played straight. And in a lot of cases, outside of Degrassi, because what the Canadians were doing with Degrassi Junior High, that was some real stuff. They were tackling some real stuff. But over here, you know, some of the things that these teens were, you know, whining and complaining about on these soap operas, these high school soap operas, were ridiculous. And I always found that hilarious, you know. And you know, growing up in the 80s, I didn't really watch those shows, but my sister did. And so I found them very funny. I mean, this is not like Saved by the Bell, because that is a comedy. That was a comedy show. I'm talking more
serious.
like Degrassi Junior High. There were shows called 15. There were shows called Swan's Crossing. You know, there were these. And then to a more greater extent, something like 90210. But so I always wanted to poke fun at shows like that, and I was like, man, this would be my bread and butter, because I you know, I love absurd comedy. But I couldn't just do it straight. I love the horror genre so much, so I have to put some elements. And you know, there's Dark Shadows from the 60s that was a primetime soap opera. Very melodramatic. The props were terrible. If something fell in the background, then it was kept because it was shot live, you know, that type of thing. And I loved that aspect. So I wanted to meld an 80s high school drama with Dark Shadows or Buffy or something like that, and play it straight, but shoot it all the way that it was shot back in the 80s on tape. With harsh, ugly lighting, you know, keep the dialogue of the time, but my dialogue, ridiculous. Everything is played straight, but it's so stupid and pushed to, you know, the
it's really
up to 11.
It's really fun, yeah. Definitely recommend watching it.
Yeah, Wellsville Nights. So we finally, during the pandemic, I finally wrote the pilot. And then we wrote the first 8 episodes of the first season. All during that, we created the pitch deck, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And we were able to shoot the pilot in 2022. And then we've had terrible luck trying to raise enough money to make the rest of the episodes. We were close, but I'm not going to let it go because everyone loves it, and we had such a fun time doing it. So,
yeah, I wished for it before it landed in my email. I mean, I was like, I'm hoping, can somebody cast me to play this? And here you are. All right, so moving on. So something else I really loved, loved, like fanatic loved, like crazy lunatic loved, went to the theater. I don't love everything, but it doesn't matter what I love. I love stuff that people hate, and I hate stuff people love. I don't like Star Wars, so it doesn't really matter what I think. But I love Caddyshack, and a lot of people love it. But who cares? Anyway, on to the next question. So you just premiered, I think last week, wildly, wildly fun movie. Definitely one of my top three, and it's called Mova, Demon Butt Kicker. So if you could just tell us a bit about that. It was so fun.
Thank you. I'm glad you had a good time. So in the year 2000, we shot a movie called Mulva Zombie Ass Kicker on Long Island with a bunch of fans who were fans of my garbage.
It's not garbage.
And with their collaboration, we shot and Troma's. Troma was a co-producer on it. Doug Sackman, who was head of production at Troma.
Yeah, did I show that?
He co-produced the movie. And so we shot this, you know, this shot on video little thing that was really meant for conventions only, you know, on VHS to sell at conventions, but ultimately ended up getting national distribution through Tempe Entertainment, thanks to Debbie Rochon, who was on a set. She's in the original movie. She was shooting a movie for Full Moon with J.R. Bookwalter in Ohio. She basically passed the movie around and said, "You guys got to see this." And J.R. was like, "This is great. Do you have distribution?" I was like, "No." So anyway, long story short, because of that movie, in 2000, we got national distribution, and a large swath of people were able to finally like see the garbage that we were doing on a much larger scale than just friends and family, you know, the previous 10 years of me making movies was. So sometime in early 2023, JR came back to me, and we were just kind of throwing around the idea of what if we did a new Mulva that paid homage to those fans and those first films that, you know, got us on the map, but did it with what we do now, sort of the group that we have now, the tech that we have now. What would it look like? How different would I make it? And that intrigued me, you know, that idea of sort of going back like that and putting a new spin on it. And then Mulva Demon Ass Kicker was born. And there's winks and nods to the first two Mulva movies that are in there. We did a movie called Filthy McNasty, which is now celebrating 25 years. We did four of those movies, but those original Mulvas and the Filthy McNasties are really the two that sort of like gained us a fan base back then. So Mulva Demon Kicker is a big sort of sloppy, wet kiss to those fans, but also anyone new that wants to discover sort of our type of stupid comedy.
Absolutely, check it out. You know, you're someone that I've more than anyone, maybe more than myself, you say your work is, it's shit, it's poop, it's stupid, but I think it's one of the most entertaining, creative, well-done thing ever. So anyway, moving on to, we have like a minute and a half, 2 minutes left. So if you can answer this question and then also give us your socials and where to find you. Kind of a long answer and weird way to close out. But you said in a different interview that basically you'll decide to keep a scene in or what to put in the movie because if it makes you laugh, then it stays. So I guess ironically, and you know, totally opposite, I just finished acting and also co-producing a 47-minute film. It took me about a year with the exact opposite rule. I laughed at one line the writer chose. So my role was basically helping this guy bring his movie to light. So you know, whatever his vision is, I made the location, I made it happen. I, you know, tried to follow along and not manhandle it. So I left it one line, and then he took it out. I said, no, keep it. It you know, I left it everything. It's a great line. So I watched the final cut, and the line is out. He wants no laughter. That's not no laughter, no laughter, no laughter. No, no, no. If it makes you laugh, I don't want it. So I don't, all I really care is about making stuff that's informative, makes you think, health. And then I used to teach health, and then stuff that is funny. So what would you do on a set like this where there's no laughter allowed in the film?
I mean, I wouldn't be there.
No, you wouldn't do it?
I wouldn't be there. You know, like,
what if you signed on and then you found that out, which is what happened to me?
I mean, I'd probably quit.
Really?
Like, that's somebody else's job. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to make something serious. There's enough. Yeah. There's enough of that out there.
I agree.
I make Chris Seaver movies, and my movies are dumb and they're silly and they're stupid, and they are created to just make people laugh. That's it.
And they do.
I have
and smile.
No. Yeah, I have no. Nothing behind them other than to, like, entertain in that way. And there's you know, my stuff is you either hate it or you love it. You can either get on board with the stupidity or you're just like, man, this stuff is terrible and I cannot get on board. So, but that's then it's not for you.
If you're for everybody, you're for nobody.
I've been lucky enough to, you know, not only make movies for me and my friends to laugh at, but there's a nice, you know, group of people out in the world who find this stuff as silly as we do. And that's great. That's a cherry on top.
So speaking of that, close out, give us your final thought and where we can find you. All listeners, where to watch your movie, see Demon Kicker, see Wellsville Nights, see it.
Yeah. So we have a YouTube page. It's called It Crept from the 80s. You can go there. That has a lot of stuff about my movie making, but also my passion and love for the 80s decade. It was my favorite decade. I lived it. I loved it. And I want to go back. You can go to Instagram, and that's Warlock Home Video. Facebook is Christopher J. Seaver or Warlock Home Video Network. And that's where all of our info is as far as like what we're doing production wise. If you want to find my movies, you can get them through Amazon. You can get them through SRS Cinema. You can get them through Makeflix. They're streaming on most of the streaming services. Malva Demon Kicker is finally coming out on physical media. It's out there now, finally. It's doing a small theatrical run.
In Florida coming up.
We got Florida coming up. We got Gettysburg coming up. We've got Philadelphia coming up. And, you know, all the streaming sites and whatnot. It's going to be hitting a lot of those sites coming up. So there you go.
Well, Chris Seaver, that's the end of our interview. So now we're going to close out and get back to Mark Torres for more It Came From the Radio.
You had any honor, you would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here every week on this radio station. If you miss any part of this show,
tough,
go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on our places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or
just Google It Came From the Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.